Listener Stories presents Classic Listener Stories.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the July Patreons episode. We're going to mix it up a little bit because we took a poll, and since we've been doing the listener story strictly for the last year, I wanted to see what everybody's thoughts were on that, and it was overwhelmingly in favor of changing it up a little bit. We still want to do some listener stories, but we're going to mix in some regular stories like we do on the main show in with it. So a combination of the two.
Sounds good to me.
And I'm glad for the feedback because it's all about, I mean, your guys are the ones that are paying for this, so I want to give you what you want, not what we want.
Exactly. And thank you for your support.
Absolutely. Today's Tracy's birthday.
Thank you.
Everybody was super nice to her
in
the group today.
Yes, everybody. I felt so loved today. Thank you guys for taking time out to tell me happy birthday. It meant the world to me, and it was just a wonderful day. And as always, my baby doll was extra good to me like he is every year.
Well, so let's go on. That was very touching, and I appreciate that because you are my baby doll. So therefore, I like to treat you like a queen because that's the way you deserve to be treated.
Aw, thanks, babe.
So let's talk about Johnny Booger. No, I'm just kidding.
Booger.
We got a couple of cool things going on this show. The first one we're going to do is a story that we listened to the last episode, we did the St. Augustine Lighthouse. And we talked about how St. Augustine's the oldest city in America, and it's listed as the most haunted, along with 47 other cities. they all claim to be the most haunted, along with Charleston, along with New Orleans. But St. Augustine's got a bunch of cool haunted places. And there was one story that I saved for this episode because I thought we were probably going to be switching it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's not a long story, but it is right there in St. Augustine. I think it's a good fit. So we're going to do that story. It's on the Spanish Military Hospital.
Oh, wow.
Then if you go back to episode 51, I believe it was. Was that wrong, Ninj? Okay. No, okay. So, but if you go back to episode 51, I think it was, we did a story on Afghanistan, and it was a pretty cool story. We had a soldier that's still currently in the military, but we didn't divulge who he was or where because they kind of got rules against that. They wrote us and said, hey, I experienced the same thing you guys talked about, and I was just blown away that you guys mentioned it.
Oh, wow.
So he comes on, and he's going to actually tell us what he experienced firsthand in these guard towers over there. So that's pretty cool.
Spooky.
And then this is like a night of listeners who wrote us that we got on.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that situation. Well, there is a young lady who sent us a message and said, you should look into a gentleman by the name of Johnny Young. He lives in Kentucky, wasn't too far away where he lived. He's been gone for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he had all kinds of folklore about this guy. And she said, you should look into him. And I did. And there really is not a lot. It's a very, very short story.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, this is pretty cool, though. And I thought, well, maybe I could get her on, since she asked about it, to tell us what she knows about the situation. And so we got her on for a few minutes, and she tells one of her paranormal stories, along with telling us a little bit about what she heard about this gentleman. But he goes by Johnny Booger.
Yeah, very exciting.
So this is going to be a fun revamp of the listener stories episode. So let's start with the Spanish Military Hospital. So obviously we did the story on St. Augustine Lighthouse. So at the Spanish Military Hospital, people say that when they enter the hospital, they get this very unnerving feeling, a feeling of sadness. The building that stands there today is not the original that was built in the late 1700s. The one that stood in originally was there until 1821. The city of St. Augustine had to replace a bunch of water and sewer lines that were underneath the foundation of that building. So they decided to just tear the whole building down and then rebuild an exact replica when they were done.
No. So I guess that was easier, huh?
I guess. So it was built in the 1700s, but 1821 is when the building that you see now was actually built. The city started tearing down the old building, and several patients and workers had been experiencing something evil and frightening in the old building. So they thought, well, maybe this will take care of that problem too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the reason for just tearing it down. I guess back in the early 1820s or whatever, people were a little more superstitious. So they thought, well, we'll get rid of the whole building and that'll fix the problem. Well, the evil presence seemed to hang in the air like a dense fog, people said. This evil that was kind of in the air, it often frightened patients, and it also ran off a couple of specialists that were hired to treat the sick and the dying there.
Mm-hmm.
It was believed that the feeling was from all of the death that, you know, just kind of lingered in the air because this was a military hospital. There was a lot of wars, stuff like that going on. But what they found out is when they started tearing down and demolishing the old structure and started digging the ground to install the new water lines, they uncovered the real reason. There were bones.
Mm.
The bones were from a burial ground that belonged to the Tumuquan people. That was a Native American tribe that was native to St. Augustine. So that may be what the main problem was. In 1934, a group of people were working near the old Fountain of Youth.
Uh-huh. Fountain of Youth?
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, where Ponce de Leon came to Florida and he was searching for it. But they were over there and they were going to plant some orange trees, a big grove of orange trees, and they ran into another burial ground there. So it's believed that the evil and frightening things that go on in the old Spanish military hospital are the spirits that were actually buried underneath the dwelling.
Mm.
So that explains, and they built the new one right up on top of it.
Right, so they didn't even catch a break.
No, and so the bottom line is the problems were already there. They thought they were going to get rid of them by tearing it down, but the problems existed. So building a new structure in the same place didn't change anything at all. All the hauntings still occurred in the new building. And there were several rooms here. There was one room that they called the morning room. Not morning like, hey, it's nighttime or morning. Morning is
like as in sad.
Yeah, as in sad. It was called the morning room, and that's where patients were moved right before they died.
Aww.
Nothing they could do.
Right, they just had to let them go.
This is where you got to let them go at. Priests would actually come to this room and bless the dying, and this is where most of the hauntings seem to occur, but most people think it's more of a residual haunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about on the show before, residual hauntings, but that more or less means it's like recordings of an event that just play over and over, kind of like a movie, and you just get to sit and watch it. So it's not really a ghost there. It's just you're seeing something that took place a long time ago. They say that you can hear screams and cries in that room, and there's also the sounds of conversations, but these conversations seem like they're coming from like somewhere distant.
Oh.
Several people claim that when they visit this room that they can see, like they're looking at a bed, but they can see an imprint of a body lying on the bed without there being an actual body.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's like an invisible person just kind of laying in the bed.
Yeah. Or a really good foam mattress. Or what do you call that? It's a memory foam.
Another room in the ward, or another room is actually called the ward. And this is where the sick and the dying were kept before they got moved to the morning room. So it was like the pre-morning, I guess, so to speak. There's so many wars that happened at this time in this area that these rooms and this hospital saw a lot of pain and death. There's been several documented cases of scary sounds that have been heard in this room, objects move on their own, and misty apparitions have been seen there.
I wonder if anybody moved the bones.
No, I'm sure they did. It was just the fact that they found it. Of course, you're still talking about 1821 or something when this was done, early 1800s. And then another thing that people see in this hospital is a transparent patient in hospital gowns wandering around the halls.
Mm. But the gowns are pretty ugly like they were today, too.
Probably are. Ass hanging out.
Yeah.
So that's the Spanish Military Hospital. Now, that place is still open.
Is it really?
I mean, they're not used. It's a museum. It's not, but you can go in and tour it and everything.
I would love to do that.
But it's the building that was built in the early 1800s. Yeah. St. Augustine has all kinds of buildings that are old as hell.
Yeah, so definitely. We need to check those out for sure.
Yep. I definitely want to go there at St. Augustine one time. It's on my little bucket list.
Yeah. That's really sad that those people are just kind of wandering around and... I mean, that's got to be annoying for people to build on top of where they're buried. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I don't look at it like that. I know that's what you always hear, and you always hear, especially Native American burial grounds, and this is sacred and this and that. I'm one of these people that believe that when you're gone and you're put in the ground, your soul goes elsewhere. So I don't think disturbing that is just a big deal to me. I disagree. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. I think in normal cases, like at a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say it's like John Wayne Gacy that had, you know, several people, 30-some people buried under his house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think because there was something traumatic that happened to those people, I think there's being buried there would cause their spirits to be there. But I just think in general, like if you just went to a graveyard or an old Indian burial ground, Native American burial ground, or whatever the case was, I just find it hard to believe that that would be really disturbing anybody, because why would they want to come back to where they were buried at just to cause a ruckus?
I don't know. It's just disrespectful.
Well, it is disrespectful.
God, you can't know where, you know, I'm sure there's probably people buried under our house, for the hell we know.
There's people buried everywhere.
Yeah, so you could not really know.
Yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to, like, Native Americans and stuff like that. I mean, because they were here way before anybody else. You know, I got a question. This is stupid, but I thought about this earlier today when I was researching one of these stories. How come that most of the people in this country are light-complected, but Native Americans were all dark-complected, and they lived all over the country? So it didn't matter. Like in Florida and Texas, you get more sun. So I understand why people might be darker complected there. But like in North Dakota, they don't get a whole lot of sun up there to where people would be dark complected. But yet Native Americans all over the country were dark complected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they come from. I mean, did Native Americans, did they migrate up originally from Mexico? That would have maybe made more sense.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because they're outside more. Well, if you're in North Dakota, you're probably not going to go outside more.
I mean, because a lot of these Native Americans were in places where it was cold.
I don't know. So. I feel like it's a stupid question, too. Not a stupid question, but I mean, when you think about it, I mean, it does make sense, but I wouldn't have a clue to what that answer would be.
I mean, they would almost have to have come from down south, I would think. Because, I mean, when you look at people from Mexico and South America, they're all really dark complected.
Maybe they go to the tanning bed.
Maybe so. All right, so
I don't know the answer to that.
I told you we were going to listen to the story about that Chris from the military gave about Afghanistan. So let's give Chris a listen real quick. All right, we are joined by a special guest here. This is Chris, and Chris is actually going to give us an adaptation of a story that we told on the show a while back, and I don't remember which episode it was, but it's been probably close to a year ago. We told us a bigger story, but then we kind of tagged a little story on at the end, and it was about some, I guess it's a base over in Afghanistan, and we had some American soldiers over there on that base, and they had a story that I hadn't heard before, and it was basically where they could see a little girl off in a distance, but it was only when they were using their night vision goggles. If they took the goggles away, they couldn't see the little girl. It was only with those goggles. And then there were stories about, you know, how that little girl came to be and how scared some of the soldiers were up there that of the paranormal activity that was going on there. And I got a message from a gentleman who spent some time in Afghanistan, and he had a very similar story, and he was very surprised to hear us tell a story that matched up to something he experienced. So I wanted to bring him on and have him talk about what happened in his occurrence there. So, Chris, thanks for coming on.
Yes, sir.
So first of all, before we get going, Chris, I want to thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
You are still active military, so we appreciate everything that you do to help keep this country safe.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate that.
Now, I'm done interrupting you. You can go ahead and tell us about your experience in Afghanistan.
All right. So I'd been in the Army for a couple of years. I'd never been deployed before. My first year in the Army, I spent in South Korea. I came back a couple of years in Oklahoma at Fort Sill. By trade, I am a field artilleryman, so I shoot cannons in support of, like, the infantry on the ground. They call it fire. We fire support. Never deployed, came to Fort Campbell. As soon as I set foot on ground, they were like, hey, you're going to Afghanistan. 30 days later, I was on a plane. lucked out with a very lucky assignment for my first 3 months and got tagged with the Special Forces guys shooting rounds for them, which means a lot of shooting because they get into a lot of troops in contact, everything else. So a lot of excitement, everything else. Beautiful way to start a deployment. Wish it would have continued that way. But unfortunately, the powers that be were like, hey, these guys don't need artillery assets anymore. We've got air that's like 20 minutes away. So they pulled us out. We got all scattered to the wind, just put in different areas that our brigade was stationed, you know, to support just different platoons that were already out there, firing platoons, all that. I, unfortunately, was put in Salerno because they needed nighttime sergeant of the guard. Brand new E5. I wasn't a high enough rank to go do some of these cool boy assignments and some of these outlying fire bases and everything else. So I kind of just got pushed into a position like, hey, you go here. Salerno is was one of the bigger bases in 2010. Probably, I don't know, 1,000, 1,500 soldiers, which kind of comes to play in my story a little bit later. My job was from 7 p.m. at night to about 7 o'clock in the morning, which was how it was back then. Things have probably completely changed now, manning, you know, times, hours, everything else. At that time, it was a 12-hour shift from 7 at night to 7 a.m. And my job was to get all the soldiers that were tasked into the towers to check them, to line them up, make sure that they had all their gear, you know, that their ammunition counts were correct. Everything was good, and then actually bring them out, relieve the offcoming shift, and place the oncoming shift for all the guard towers that guarded forward operating base. I forget how many towers it was. Like I said, this is the OEF 1011, so this is going on 8 years ago, so some of the details are kind of fuzzy. I do remember that there were at least 15 or 16 towers. The tower in question that we're going to talk about tonight is Tower 9. Now, it was episode 51 that you talked about this, and I only remember from shooting you guys the message. I was obviously freaked out when I heard the last part of your episode because I was like, oh my God, this is everything that we went through. But you guys said it was Tower 6. Now, Tower 6 probably is these tower numbers change all the time versus whether they add towers, take away towers, whatever it may be. But when I was there, it was OP9. I remember when I got there and I took over, first few months were pretty quiet, no issues, learning the job, learning, you know, what I needed to do, what to look for, everything else. And then one night, about, I want to say 2-3 months in, I get a call on the radio. And I get the kid in the radio and he's like, hey, Sergeant, can you come out here? And I try to call back and I'm like, hey, what's going on? What do you need me for? You know, there's 15 different towers. They're all spread out over this forward operating base. So for me to just jump and go out there is kind of a pain in the can end. So I'm trying to get more information. Do I need to wait? Do I need to bring anything? Is it serious? Is it not serious? Whatever. No answer backs. Finally, I just jump in the gun truck and I go out there. I go out there and the Afghani soldier is at the bottom of the tower. Now, back in the day, you had two soldiers up in these towers. And like I said, it's probably changed by now. And I'm saying that because I don't want to give any type of operational security information out or anything else like that. But 8 years ago, things have probably changed 15 umpteenth billion times since then. But back in the day, you had an American soldier up there and you had an Afghani soldier. The reason being is we're trying to get this country back to the Afghanis. So, you know, trying to show them the way. Well, the Afghani soldiers weren't really all there all the time. But this one, I didn't know if it was because it was one of these dudes not all there or just, you know, he's legitimately freaked the hell out. Anyway, he's at the bottom of the tower. He's speaking a bunch of Afghani gibberish. I can't understand him, but he's obviously freaked out. So first thing I'm thinking is there's some sort of attack going on, whatever. I go up into the tower. I'm like, hey, dude, why aren't you answering the radio? And he's like, I didn't want to mess with it. The American soldier at this point. I'm like, what do you mean he didn't want to mess with it? He's like, look, the radio's been making funky sounds. I didn't understand what it was at first. But it sounds like somebody laughing in the radio. And I'm like, are one of these other towers messing with us? Are these guys, because at the end of the day, they're soldiers. You got 18, 19, 20-year-old kids up there. You think they're up there for 12-hour shifts. You get bored. Maybe somebody's grabbing a radio and joking around. Obviously, they shouldn't be, but you never know. So I'm like, well, have you talked to these other towers, seen what's up? And I get on the horn, and I'm like, hey, if anybody's messing around on the radio, y'all need to stop. They say, no, nobody's messing around on the radio. And I'm like, so why is the Afghani guy at the bottom of the tower? Why is your ANA soldier at the bottom of the tower? And he tells me, he's like, hey, look, that's why I didn't touch the radio. We heard a little bit of laughing, and we called the other towers. Nobody said anything. We couldn't get out on the radio. We heard more laughing. And then the hairs on my neck stand up. He tells me that there's been a sound of like somebody scraping a knife or scraping something on the sandbags outside of the tower. Now, all these guard towers, they're covered in sandbags. It's to stop, like, you know, bullet fire and everything else. So they're like, imagine like three or four shipping connexes piled on one on top of the other. And then the top one is surrounded with sandbags. And that's like where everybody sits. This, obviously, with windows cut into it and everything, but, you know, covered in sandbags. And the sandbags, they said they heard something scraping and around the tower. Then it stopped for a little bit. And then it continued. And then the radio would start laughing again. Well, this happened about three or four times. I guess the Afghani guy had had enough. And he just said, basically, screw this, and left the tower. All right, so I talk the Afghani guy off the ledge, get him back into the tower. Everything's good. I leave. I don't think anything of it. And like, whatever. Guy's making up stories. No big deal. A few nights, nothing. No freakouts. And then I start getting lots of calls. Like, lots of calls for the same crap. Laughing on the radio. No other towers are hearing it. The scraping. And then, even freakier, I start getting stories about kids saying that it feels like somebody's rummaging around in their pockets. I kid you not, all over the place, and tons of them. Now, this is the crazy thing. Salerno is a huge forward operating base, and there's probably close to a couple thousand soldiers there, or there were in 2010. I don't know anymore. But the guard detail was a detail. It wasn't, you didn't have the same number of soldiers. So you didn't have 20 soldiers, or let's see, 15 towers. You didn't have 30 soldiers that were assigned to guarding the post. You know, 15 in the morning, 15 in the evening. You sent messages out to these units, and there may have been 12, 15 units on there at the time. And you said, hey, we need this many soldiers for this period of time. Basically, what I'm saying is these are soldiers up there that don't talk to each other because they're so spread out. They have different positions and different jobs, and there's not really a way for information for these stories to change hands. You know what I mean? So that's what the freakiest part is these stories were the same from soldiers that were up there that had no way of passing that information along. That's what started to lend credibility to me personally to ask the questions like, okay, what the hell is going on? This isn't just a bunch of guys getting together to make up stories to pass the time. So back to the freakiest part, the rummaging around in the pockets. These kids talk about how they'd have cigarettes, lighters, you know, back in the day, not many of us had cell phones. It was 2010, but none that you could use over there anyway. But, you know, little things, knives, pens would fly out of sleeve pockets and everything else. But craziness. That goes on for a while. Finally, a couple months into that, and this pretty much happened every night. Every night, maybe it skipped one night or so, but all the time. Finally, the last night comes. I'm out there and doing my checks around the base. I am at the exact opposite end of the base. And a lot of details are fuzzy, but this one is clear. And I remember the battle NCO, which is the guy that's in charge of all the base operations. Like, he's my boss and everything. He's like, you need to go out to OP9 because we're doing hourly radio checks and they are not answering the radio. Now, combat environment in Afghanistan 2010, somebody's not answering a radio in a guard tower, very serious. You automatically think the worst, because it is a cardinal sin to not answer that radio. You are the base defense. You're the first line if somebody attacks that fence line. And for them not to be answering, my mind automatically thinks, hey, shit is about to go down, or it's already gone down. I need to get out there and figure out what's going on to plug this hole and protect the FOB interior. So I radio in, we grab a bunch of guys, we go out there, and we pull in, and both dudes are at the bottom of the tower. And I am livid. What the frig? There is literally no excuse on the face of this earth for you to leave your guard post. And I go up, and both guys are white. Especially the American soldier. The Afghani guy is freaked out, but the American soldier is white. And he is not typically, I remember his face, I don't remember his name, but not typically one of the guys that was shooken by much and everything else. Plus, realize that we've been 7, 8, 9 months into this combat deployment. There, you get used to a lot. There's not a lot that really shakes you. You get used to your job and what you're doing, and you get used to how to react under pressure. Well, this guy is freaked the F out all the way. And I'm like, what's going on, dude? And he pulls out a cigarette, lights a cigarette, hands me one. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to figure out what's up. And regales me with this tale of what happened. He said he was up in the tower, and he's scanning this sector with the LRAS. All these towers had these decommissioned laser range finders. They're these huge boxes with two joysticks on either side. They used to be used on the back of trucks and everything to paint laser targets for missiles and everything. Well, they're outdated, and they're big, and they're clunky, but they still have great thermal. They still have great MVGs, and at least they did 8 years ago. They're probably all sitting in a scrapyard now. But at the time, they were great, even though they couldn't, you know, they were out of date. They were still great to put in the towers for surveillance. He's looking through this LRAS. And it gives you like a probably 12 by 12 screen in front of you where you can see night vision. He's looking down at the fence line. He sees this little girl. It's strange because it's the middle of the night. I mean, even though it's Afghanistan, it's still kind of like strange for children to be out that late into the night. We're talking probably 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. He goes to call it up. Because unfortunately, these guys love to use kid. It is very unfortunate, but you have to call up everything that you see, because even though it's a child, you don't know if the child could be carrying something or recon for something that could be coming after. So you call up everything that you see. So at least the battle NCO and the command post is aware of what's going on. So he steps away from the LRAS and starts walking towards the radio on the other side of the tower. And the strange thing he says is it was a completely bright moon night. Full moon, good visibility, fence line 40, 50 yards away maybe. And he can't see her anymore. That's very strange. Should be able to see, you know, this girl and everything. So he goes back in to look in the LRAS. And she's still there. So he leans his head to the side, looks, she's gone, leans his head back in, looks in the LRAS, leans to the side, she's gone. He said he looked over at the Afghani guy, but the Afghani guy like shrugged his shoulders, didn't know what was going on and everything else. And then before he could have the Afghani guy look through the LRAS, he said that he looked back in, and this girl was standing on the outside of the tower, and I'm talking like the seconds between looking at the fence line and looking through the LRAS, 40, 50 yards away and everything. And he said just he saw the face, full body outline, just she is staring right back in like inches away from the lens of this LRAS. He said he screamed. He said the Afghani guy screamed, and they both jetted and flew out the tower. They refused to go back up in for about an hour. It took me to talk them off the ledge and explain to them that, look, I don't care, ghost or no ghost, whatever you're talking about, I don't know if it's lack of sleep or if that tower's haunted or what, you know, the overall mission is more important. You're up there, regardless of the threat. That's why you're here. Finally get him back up in there. That was the final night of the most freaky crap, I guess. The rest of it, you'd have little stories here or there. I don't know why things calmed down or whatever, but we didn't hear much out of the Tower 9 after that. About a month and a half, 2 months later, we went home, and that was a wrap. So we get back. I'm sitting there drinking beers and talking with the guy that was the battle NCO at the time. He's getting ready to retire and everything. And we just think about it. And like, why don't we Google this and just see what's up and see if it pops up on anything. And we look it up. And if you Google OP9 Salerno, Afghanistan, there is a story that comes up on one of the followings about how Salerno used to be a Marine post back in the day when we had the first initial invasion of Afghanistan. The Marines were there just as much as the Army, I suppose. And I guess somehow, some way, there was an accidental shooting of a young girl on the fence line outside of where OP9 sits. And ever since then, it started as soon as she was killed. The Marines up in that tower started complaining of weird occurrences in that tower. And I guess it just continued. And I don't know if it still goes on today, but I'll tell you what, OP9, Forward Operating Base Salerno in Afghanistan, is haunted. I can tell you what, that is for sure.
Now, Chris, before any of this, did you have a belief in the paranormal? Is that something you did believe in, or was this like your first real eye-opening event?
It was really my first eye-opening event. I'd never had any... I had a belief in it, but never any experience with it. I grew up very... my parents were Jehovah's Witnesses growing up. So it was a weird religious thing that they weren't really into all the so much ghost stories, but there was a belief in demons and everything. But I didn't know what to believe. It was so much church shoved down my throat that it was kind of just like, yeah, I understand what's going on, but I never gave it too much stock. You know what I mean?
Right. Something like that would definitely, especially when you had occurrence after occurrence after occurrence, and like you said, so many people telling you the same story that didn't really have contact with each other on the base, you know, that's, and people, they would think initially maybe, you know, well, I mean, yeah, you say that, but you know, they're still on the same base. But when you think about like 2,000 people, I mean, there's companies out there that have 2,000 people. And when you ask people like, you know, hey, do you know so-and-so? They're always like, I mean, it's a huge, huge ass, you know, company. Yeah, my chances of actually knowing them are slim. And then that really puts it in perspective because everybody's done that. They've always asked somebody
exactly
if they know somebody works in a company.
That's what freaked us out the most, me and the battle NCO, because it's the same way in the Army. And a lot of these guys are different units that come from different posts. So it's not like everybody there was from Fort Campbell. There were people there from Hood, there were National Guard guys, you know, there were people from all over the place. And those people tend to stick together. They don't really crosstalk because they've trained so much together. It's like their little band of brothers and friends and everything. Giant cliques, you know what I mean? And there's not much crosstalk except on the command level for strategic planning and everything, you know? So it just does, it never sat with me that this information could get passed. Like it just wouldn't happen. Like I never really saw the same soldiers up in these towers more than once or twice. It was always somebody different. So why are the stories all the exact same, you know?
Well, it's like you said too, we'll end on this, but I mean, them guys had been over there for a while. They're seeing combat. It doesn't get much tougher than that. You know, so for them to be so freaked out over something like that, they obviously had some type of a real genuine fear at something they saw.
Exactly.
Chris, thank you so much, brother, for your ongoing support of this country. And I'm glad you came on and told this story. You're the first military story we've actually had on. So it's pretty cool.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to come on and talk a little bit. I definitely do.
All right, brother. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
See, that's a cool story. I wish we had more military stories out there because I bet there's a lot more.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. I mean, it's hard enough on them to see real action and what's really going on in front of their face, like for real. But to see you know, something that they're just watching out, and then to, you know, look with the night vision and see her and then not use it and then she's not there.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up.
That is messed up.
Let's dig into this Johnny Booger case. You giggled. So Johnny Booger, his real name was Johnny Young. He was what most people call a healer. And if you had a sick kid or if you were sick yourself, you'd go to him to be cured. There was a young boy's parents that took him to see Johnny, and he had that really severe earache. They said Johnny took him into his hands and simply blew into his ear, and the boy stopped crying and the earache was gone. Johnny Booger also could do other things. He could point at a gate and it would open or close whenever he wanted to. He was going by somebody's house one day and there were some chickens and turkeys out in the yard, and Johnny told him that those animals were going to die. The man laughed at him and told him they'd be fine. The next morning, they were all dead, not killed or poisoned. They just died somehow during the night.
Oh my gosh.
It was also said that when Johnny Booger died, that his house lit up like a Christmas tree inside and out. Horrible sounds could be heard. The cemetery where he's buried at is a local party ground. You know, all the local teens like to go there to drink and break into the church and smoke pot and drink and all that stuff. All those teens have been there usually about once, and then they quit coming back. It said that flames shot up from Johnny's grave, and they said that they had really bad things happen to him since the time they were there. More than one person has said that. More than one has seen it. He's buried on Young's Fork in Knott County on Lots Creek in Kentucky.
You know, so you said he blew in your ear and the earache would go away, like blew smoke in your ears?
No,
what you
just,
said?
Just blew, period. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny because I guess that's where I had this older person I went to church with, and that was when I was a little kid. And shit, that's what she did. And I might wonder if that's just where he came from.
I don't know.
She swore up and down. Like, one time she spit, which is so disgusting. I had a really bad sunburn on my arms, and she said, here, let me see your arm. And all of a sudden, she just, like, spit on my arm and started rubbing it. It was so disgusting. That'll take the burn out. That'll take the burn out. That's what she said. But she's done that blowing in your ear thing, too.
Well, I've said before on a show, my grandma used to do that for burns. Like, when I had a burn on my wrist from a griddle, where my hand just sit on a griddle for, like, 10 seconds.
Duh.
And, well, it was an accident. I was, like, 12 or something. Actually, I think I was younger. I think I was about eight. Anyways, but she would whisper little things, but she was, you know, about, I think she was like 75% Cherokee.
Uh-huh.
But she would whisper and blow on it and say these little incantations that nobody could really hear her.
Uh-huh.
But it would always heal. And that's what everybody went to her for, was for burns.
Very cool.
So anyways, the young lady, Sakwa.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
I think you did.
Because I know it took a few times, but she had told us about this, so mm-hmm. I brought her on the show, and she told us a little bit about what she knew about him, some other cool things about him.
Oh, yeah, she had a very interesting story.
And then she had a story of her own that mm-hmm. wouldn't necessarily tie with him, but it worked out pretty well, so let's listen to Sakwa. Okay, I got a special guest here, and this guest, actually, the story that you just heard, she was the one who wrote me and said, hey, have you ever heard this? And I had never heard of it, which is really strange considering that this gentleman is from our home state. You would have thought that would have been one of the ones that I'd heard of, and I hadn't. So Sakwa is from Kentucky, and I guess Johnny Young, is he from your hometown or where you were living at?
He is actually from the county over where I grew up. He's from Knott County, Kentucky, and I grew up in Perry County, Kentucky.
Okay. Yeah, that's not too far then.
Right.
So, as far as, you know, like I said, in the story we told, there was, as far as Johnny goes, they said he could just point to animals and they would die, or he could make animals appear or reappear. You've heard a few little stories that were a little different than what I told about some sheep. Can you kind of reiterate on that a little bit?
Yes, I had heard that. I don't know who the lady was, but I guess she was a skeptic, and she went to go meet Johnny Booger, and he told her that he could have something happen. So he waved his hand and had a whole flock of sheep appear, She actually saw the sheep. She actually touched their fur and felt them. He waved his hand again, and they disappeared. They were gone right before her eyes.
Wow.
So let me ask you this. When you hear these stories, and because I understand that in his hometown and in that area around there, that this man is bigger than life. I mean, it's like he is such a legend around there. Do you get the feeling that most people believe these things happen, or it's just a really cool story?
Well, I think it's kind of both infused. I think a lot of people do believe the stories, but some of the stories have gotten to be tall tales also. So I think people don't know where the legend ends and where the tall tales begin with him. So it's kind of interesting. That's why I wanted you to do some research to see what you could find, to see what, you know, if you could find anybody that could verify any of the stories that I had heard when I was younger.
The only thing that I had found, I went back and found like an old topics page and a couple of other things, but there was a gentleman that was writing on there, but the stuff he was writing for was from 2009, and he had an email address on there, but he said that this was his great-grandpa, and he said he had some stories if anybody wanted to email. So I emailed him, but I didn't get a response back. So I don't know if that gentleman's even still alive, or if he's got that email address might not be active anymore, or maybe he'll write me back in 2 weeks or something. I'm not sure.
Maybe. But I would be interested to hear some stories he has.
Oh, I thought the whole thing was fascinating. I mean, we've got some pretty cool people from the state when you look at like that and Edward Gacy and so many other stuff. I mean, maybe it's just something in the water in these smaller towns in Kentucky.
There is something about the hills. There definitely is.
So another reason I brought you on is you've got a really cool personal story that, you know, it's not really a pleasant story. And I thought I would let you tell it to the listeners. I think they'll enjoy this one.
Right. And before I get into this, I want to explain what kind of where I was in my life. Before this encounter, I did not believe in any kind of evil other than the evil in man. I didn't believe in Satan. I didn't believe in demons. I didn't believe in devils. I didn't believe in possession until something happened to me. So this happened about 5 or 6 years ago. I was visiting my friends. At the time, I lived in Lexington, Kentucky. That's where you guys film the show.
Yep.
And I like to get away from the city. So I visited a couple of my friends who live in Martin County, Kentucky, which is pretty close to the West Virginia border.
Mm-hmm.
They lived up in a holler. And it's just really quiet away from the city. So it was me and my son. We went there, spent the week with them. It was around Christmas time. They always let me have their room whenever I stayed with them. And they actually changed their bedroom around just for us. So my son, who was very young, and he was 1 or 2 at the time, so he wouldn't roll off the bed. So the way their bed was, if you were laying in it and if you sat up, you would be facing their doorway. Well, I'm laying in bed with my son, and I hear him whimpering. I don't know where he is because he's not next to me, and I know he didn't roll off the bed. Well, I find him, somehow he crawled down and ended up in between my legs. I was like, okay, so I got him, and I brought him back up towards me. Later on, I hear him whimpering yet again. I bolt up, and there he is again in between my legs. This time, in the doorway, I see this huge thing, a big black blobby shadow, hunched over my son. And it looked like it was feeding off of him.
Oh, my gosh.
I might get emotional. I apologize.
You're okay.
So I've had encounters from the time, literally since I've been in the crib, and I've never seen anything like this. It scared me, so I didn't know what to do, so I chose to ignore it. I got my son. I put my arm around it, and that made it mad. I guess it was feeding off of him, giving him a nightmare or something. Because it goes from that side of the bed, and it walks around next to me. I'm holding my son tight, and it starts yelling at me in several different voices. But it sounds like when you're a little kid and you talk in a fan and you get that robotic voice, mm-hmm. that's what all the voices sounded like all at once. Well, most of the voices sounded female. I could pick out one male voice, and then I realized one of the female voices I knew. It was the voice of one of my friends that I was staying with. I couldn't make out what she was saying because all the voices were yelling at me together. I just chose to ignore it, so I went to sleep. I don't know how I went to sleep, but I did. So then I go into a nightmare, straight into a nightmare. It's like this thing got in my head, figured out what my worst fears were, and tried to put them into a nightmare just for me. In this dream, I was walking around naked, which to me, that would scare anybody, including myself. Then, I'm trying to find my son. He's lost. I walk up these stairs. It looks like an apartment. My brother, who is gay, tries to rape me. I have this thing again, like this incest thing. It's just really, like, it took that. And I knew it was a dream at that point because I was like, well, why is my gay brother trying to rape me? This doesn't make sense. Well, then my son, who could barely walk at the time, he comes running out of a different apartment. He runs down the stairs. I see him. I start chucking after him. He's running faster than I can, and he's headed towards the street where a car is getting ready to run over him. And before the car runs over him, I force myself to wake up because that's not something that I wanted to see. So I take this thing off again. It was over me that time, feeding off of me. And at that point, it starts screaming at me again. And I don't know what to do. Like, how do you fight something like that? It touches me somehow. It felt like it touched my heart. And it hurt so bad, a shock of electricity. It went from my heart throughout my whole body, and I was stunned. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream for help. This thing continued to scream at me, and all I wanted to do was kill it. And then it left. I still was so shaken, I could not yell out for my friends. And then when I finally was able to compose myself, all I could think of was, how do I kill this thing? How do I kill this thing? Well, I hear a voice in my head, and it's a guide or an angel, and it tells me to throw love at it. How do you throw love at something that tried to kill you? So I get mad at this angelic voice in my head. How do you love something like that? And it just said, just do it. Just love it. That's how this thing will go away. So then, the next morning, I tell my friends what happened. And they make fun of me, of course. They totally didn't believe me. But I had to tell somebody. And I said, look, I'm still hurting. My chest is still hurting. This thing really hurt me. Well, I stayed there. I wanted to go home, but I stayed there for the week because I always stayed there before Christmas to celebrate with them. When I went home, I was still hurting. I went to the doctor, and I couldn't tell him this story, but I told him exactly where I felt pain. And I actually think he missed his mark. I think think it was aiming for my heart and got my lungs instead. So I tell my doctor, I think I have pneumonia right here. He was like, well, that's kind of odd for somebody to tell me that, but we'll check you for pneumonia. So they do the x-ray. Hey, guess what? You've got pneumonia exactly where you said it was. First time I've ever had it. Never had pneumonia in my life. So then I turned to my sister, who we all have kind of gifts. Hers seems to be, she just kind of knows things. I don't know exactly what you would call that. But I tell her the story. And when I'm telling her the story, she asks me, who is Cassandra? And I'm like, okay, that's not a very common name. Cassandra's a girl that used to watch my friend's house for them. And she tells me that Cassandra's seen this thing, and she's given it a piece of her. And she tells me that this thing is made out of four different people that have fragmented off of them and have made this thing. And it's like a PK manifestation. I heard the voice of my friend. My sister, I hadn't told her that I heard my friend's voice in this thing yet. And she told me that my friend had a part of her in it, and that my friend was a little bit dark, which I felt my friend was a little bit dark. Her brother had died not long before that, and she actually cursed God. She said things about God I will never repeat. And I think when she did that, part of her soul fractured off and created this thing. And we kind of figured out who the other two pieces belong to, but I won't talk about them because they're gone. But that's my story. I've tried to pray and give love to this thing. I haven't seen it again. I hope nobody ever does. But yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think about that story?
I don't even know where to start. That's got so many different elements in it. And I mean, anytime you've got an entity that wants to feed off of your fears, that may be the scariest thing that's out there, because, you know, everybody, you go back to like the Nightmare on Elm Street thing. That was the whole thing that made Freddy Krueger so scary, was the fact that he would come to you in your dreams and feed off of your worst nightmares, and you were kind of helpless. And I think that's kind of what you were experiencing, is something similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope I never encounter it again. I haven't been down as much as I used to. I used to see my friends all the time. I haven't seen them in years.
Wow.
And I think of that thing often.
So you never had any, like, marks on the outside of your body or anything like that, right?
I didn't see any marks. It felt like it hit directly inside of me and branched out.
Wow. That's crazy. Scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't go down there no more. Just hang up here in Kentucky with us good folk up here. Stay away from all that nonsense.
Well, that is in Kentucky. It's Inez, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, I can't imagine going through anything like that at all. Cause I mean, I don't even know how I would handle such a thing, but, and I'm like you, how do you show love? I mean, I can hug you to death, but how do you hug someone like that? You know what I'm saying?
It was created out of hate. It was created out of anger. It was created out of people that turned their back on God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this thing got its own consciousness, and it wanted more consciousness, you know?
Right.
So it was trying to get strong and feed off of us, and it thought I was weak, I guess.
Yeah. Oh.
But I made it very mad.
Well, but you know what? That's good. So hopefully he won't be bothering you anymore, so.
Yeah. That's probably my worst story. I have many, many others, but that's definitely my worst, and it made me change my whole perspective on what evil is.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely understand that, and we thank you for coming on and sharing that, and I know all the listeners are going to, I guess, for lack of better words, enjoy the story. I don't know if that's good, but it's still.
I mean, you know what he means. Like, how you don't want
it's to. It's a good story.
No, it is a right. very good story.
It was traumatizing.
Right, right.
Well, thank you so much for giving us the topic of Johnny Booger, and also for telling us the story. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you guys so much. I love you both.
Oh, love you too, sweetheart. Thank you for listening.
Was it?
That has to be one of the most messed up stories that we've ever had on here.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up for sure. And I feel so bad for her that she had to endure that.
I mean, can you imagine that you wake up in the middle of the night and you get your baby, which you feel like you're the main protector of your baby. I mean, that's the way all parents feel. Mm-hmm. And then this is kind of like out of your control.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and this thing's trying to feed off of it, and it's not, the baby's not where you put it at, and it's, you know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, that wraps up this new revamped edition. I hope you like the new format.
Yeah, I hope y'all enjoyed that. And if you have any other suggestions, please let us know. If there's something different you want us to try, we would love to hear about that, and we will do our best.
Thank you, guys, and we'll talk to you here soon.
Bye, guys. Love you.